Canuck Central on a Wednesday on Sportsnet 650. Satyar Shah with Vic Nizar. Dan Riccio mending his voice. Hopefully he's back tomorrow. We have a big event coming up for the Men's Health Foundation at the aquarium tomorrow. We'll be chatting with Trevor Linden, amongst others. So that's coming up tomorrow. But so Reach is mending his voice, kind of losing the voice a little bit, so we're making sure he's going to be 100% for tomorrow.
And it's playoff time. Everyone plays hurt.
Yeah, the Canucks are
not. Did he not have a good training camp this year? Like,
Vic,
does he not know in April you got to tough through it?
He's just reflecting what the organization ended up doing this season, right? You know, no playoffs and no playoffs to Reach. They don't make the playoffs, Reach doesn't go to the playoffs. That's as simple as that. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfies your midday cravings by choosing a main, side, and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less.
I'm excited for the Reach. Sorry, you got to finish.
No, I'm good.
I had laryngitis in the off season.
Laryngitis in the off season. Does that mean you can't train? You can't use your brain? You can't come up with takes? Write them out?
Can't exercise the vocal cords?
Do voice exercises? Get your thoughts in, as always, to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650.
I had the black lung.
There's 32 other teams that want a Satshaw. We loved him during his time with us.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I have been called 650's JT Miller in the past.
You have, yes.
I have been, so we'll leave it at that.
We're so unhinged. Like, poor guy is just, like, trying to save up his voice for a great event tomorrow that you guys are going to be hosting.
And bashing
guy's got no gumption to be on air today.
The culture at our station has become, we're just waiting for the next person to screw up. 100%. And as soon as somebody screws up, we just pile on. And even if somebody is sick or whatever, if they're not here, we're going to use that opportunity against them.
But so, you know, honestly, we have such a nice camaraderie here, right? We genuinely do.
Yeah, but, sure.
But there are times, like, I've been ill, and you, Randy, whoever it is, we're like, hey, you
everyone
okay?
Steps up, yeah.
Like, I always get a text. It's like, you good? It's like, yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm fine. And then the next message immediately is coward.
Coward, yeah. You good? Okay. Yeah. As all long right. You're good, all right. You're all a coward. Right.
Thanks.
Get better, coward.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens.
All
right. Well, that's just the peek behind the scenes at a dysfunctional workplace. That's Sportsnet 650. Let's get to the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me.
It is the Open, where we discuss the latest on the Vancouver Canucks. And the latest is nothing. Rick Tocchet has yet to sign with the Vancouver Canucks.
Talk watch.
Tom Vilander is yet to sign with the Vancouver Canucks.
Tom watch.
Tom and talk.
Yeah.
So neither has signed. There has been, developing news on it. I suppose it depends on how you view Frank Ciravalli's discussion with Halford and Bruff this morning, where he mentioned the New York Rangers as a team that possibly could be interested or make sense for the Rangers with Tocchet. Now, I know there's rumors of other people going to New York, and anytime the Rangers have a vacancy, they are going to be linked with pretty much every big name out there, because that's what the Rangers do. They go after big name head coaches. Now, the other thing too that Frank mentioned, and this is something that it's clear, and we confirm it too, the Tocchet's contract isn't over yet.
Mm-hmm.
The Canucks have not picked up the option, but it doesn't expire until the end of the month of June. So right now, if any team wants to speak to Rick Tocchet, they have to ask for permission. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't do nudge, nudge, wink, wink, or get messages through or whatever. So
you can say, hey, we're in control of the situation and not get fined by the league. You can say that.
Apparently you can. Yeah. So it's one of those things where you can't be naive and say you can't get messages or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the Canucks have not so far granted permission to anybody to speak to Rick Tocchet. They are still hopeful. And, you know, people I've spoken to today still optimistic, Bick, that they can get and will get something done with the head coach. But every day that goes by creates more questions. Every day that goes by, it seems like a new vacancy opens up, or you hear more about potential more vacancies opening up. So with that being the case, the urgency aspect is what you wonder about. Now, it's been reported and clear, even from the organization standpoint, and even from Tocchet, that they want to have this resolved relatively quickly. The hope had been, hopefully, this week. Now, it's Wednesday. There's still days left in this week. But at what point do you get to, this is taking too long? Does Tockett wait to see the first round end to see if somebody else shakes open and he plays his cards a bit more?
And also from the other team's perspective, right? If this plays out for a while and say there's a vacancy that remains open for some time here, that'd be an indication that, okay, Tockett's on their list and maybe there's a waiting for an opportunity to speak to other teams. So if other teams' vacancies drag on, that to me is a linked indicator of, okay, they're waiting for the opportunity, or July 1, they're not going to be making a UFA announcement. They're going to be making a coaching announcement for another team. So from Vancouver's vantage point, what, we're 3 days already into this since the – or 2 days since the end of season presser, 5 days since Tockett spoke. Honestly, like by next Monday, if you don't really have an answer, you've got to start your coaching search. And how robust is that going to be? You obviously got an internal candidate with Manny Malhotra, who their playoffs getting underway as well. But what is your search going to look like? Are you going to be on an expedited timeline as well? Also, given that this team's history, or this regime's history, is they want quick transitions. They don't sit on first-round picks. They don't sit on coaching vacancies. They swap pretty quickly here. Mm-hmm. Are they simultaneously doing a coaching search themselves right now?
Well, I think so far the Canucks, I don't think, have really delved into that. And I think that's an indication of their belief still that they'll get something figured out with the head coach. But it's also very clear, Bic, that they're not any closer. Mm-hmm. And that there is a gulf. Now, my understanding is, Bic, like, we're not talking about millions apart. We're talking about hundreds of thousands apart. Now, that's still significant money, but I don't think we're talking about... I think the figure that they're apart is probably within 500,000. And if that's the case, to me, that's a gap you can bridge.
I'll steal an Elliot Friedman phrase. Is that the deal zone, right? There's negotiations, and then you get to the deal zone where, like, okay, we know we're going to get this figured out. Now we're just working out semantics.
Yeah.
And if you do end up getting to that stage, yeah, you're fighting tooth and nail for everything. I also wonder, you know, Tox is a very considerate guy. I was just wondering, like, hey, the staff getting taken care of as well. I always likened it to what happened in Carolina. Rod Brindamore, like, really hammered it out for his entire coaching staff to make sure everyone was brought back, compensated well, if that starts to play out here as well.
I do think that's a great point, that there could be more moving parts here that aren't being considered. And that's why I think, to some degree, the optimism is understandable, even though nothing seems to have moved yet. But I'm with you. I kind of think that if that's how far apart you are, there's a deal to be made. Is it meeting in the middle? Is it getting closer? I just don't know if it makes sense for you not to bring the guy back that you want to bring back for, in the big picture, 500,000, even if it's 500 or 600, whatever it is. Like, to me, big picture for, and I know it's a lot of money, but you were talking about a nearly $100 million cap. You're talking about player salaries being as high as they are. And I understand the cost for Canadian is all different. I get it. But big picture wise, are you going to let the guy you want to coach this team go over a few hundred thousand?
The extra benefits of a $500,000 investment is massive, right? You've now upped your chances to retain Quinn Hughes. You've now upped your chances to still be a certain player in certain markets because, again, Tockett is well-liked. I just think it is important to negotiate. It is important to have a hard line and be a tough negotiation team. But the huge benefits of solving this, to me, I hope it doesn't collapse. Someone's just texted here, says Zadorov says hi.
Yeah,
fair point.
No,
fair point.
And at the same time, like, they moved there to Zadorov. Now they moved late.
Yes,
had they moved earlier, perhaps, but he turned down the same money in the end. So they went there. The question was timing with Zadorov.
But I would also say that one doesn't have ancillary benefits that help you out in all sorts of facets.
Now, okay, so you mentioned that. Let's put a figure on it. Let's say that I think it's understood that Craig Berube is getting about $4 million per season. Let's say, argument's sake, hypothetical, that that's what Tockett is looking for. Tockett hasn't won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So we can like Rick Tockett. I think he's done a good job, and he's got good pedigree. And he has become one of the longest serving coaches now, active coaches.
I think
in the
he's
NHL.
11th or 10th.
Yeah. So, I mean,
he hasn't been
around
very long.
No, but it just shows you, right? Like, so, and he's been around the league now for a while. He's coached a lot of games now. He's not just a new coach who's just making it up. He's in his 60s, right? Is he actually worth $4 million plus as a head coach? Like, we can sit here and talk about, okay, whether they should sign him for Quinn and it's the right move or not and all those sort of things. But hypothetically speaking, if that's a number, and again, maybe it's not, but let's just say it is. Like, is he the type of coach that's worth being paid in the same breath as Stanley Cup winners, considering he doesn't really have any playoff success on his record?
I think it's just so fascinating, too, because, like, all these leverage points that we're talking about, if you're Rick Tocchet, you can say, yes, I am, because what is the risk to you if I'm not here next year?
Yeah.
Like, part of it is the Quinn Hughes dynamic and all that. So if I'm Rick Tocchet, it's an easy argument to make say that you're worth $4 million because it's not $4 million to the market. It's $4 million to the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, it's not – you don't get what you're worth. You get what you negotiate.
Yes.
Right? And I think that's – and I think the leverage points go to his favor. You're right. But I'm just saying from that whole idea of, like, just give him the money. I get it from, you're trying to keep Quinn. But is he actually a coach who should be talked about? I know Frank has mentioned that he's – a top five coach, and the staff is a top five staff in the National Hockey League. And I do know a lot of people in the league like Rick Tocchet and view him that highly. But, you know, I'm not quite sure I can sit here and say, yeah, I view him as highly as guys who won Stanley Cups and taken teams deep into the postseason, because he's yet to show he can take a team deep into the postseason. And I'm sure he's capable of doing so, but he's yet to do it.
The Sullivans, Coopers, I think Bednar is at $5 million. Bruce Cassidy, I think, is around that number. So that's all recent Stanley Cup winners.
Yeah.
Are you $500K less than that? $750K less than that? Probably not, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, like, what's the alternative here for Vancouver? That's the situation. And if you're Rick Tocchet, yeah, like, I might bleed this out for another handful of days here. It's a unique opportunity. It's not just, hey, I'm a decent coach and I'm valuable to you. It's, can you convince me, because I got options, TV and whatnot. I'm desired on the market. I might be the best coach on the market if I get to July 1. But also, your best player wants me here. And not only that, your best player is on a timeline here that I fit to increase your chances to retain the player. It's certainly a position of power for Rick Tocchet here.
Well, okay, so you mentioned improving the roster, right? And that's going to be the big challenge. And we spoke about this yesterday, that the Canucks have a really hard road to go through here to be able to improve the team significantly enough next year to convince Quinn to stay here long term, right? It's a very difficult thing to do. At the same time, you have to look at what you have to make those trades. And I do think, Bick, like I mentioned yesterday, that the Canucks are not going to be stopped, essentially. Like, they're in a position where I think they're going to be willing to pay a price, and if they have to overpay to get somebody, they will.
By any means necessary?
Yeah, because, you know, the thing that stood out, and Breach made this point yesterday, when Rutherford said the cost of us not getting a center might be higher, what do you think he's saying?
Okay, so I heard you guys talking about, like, the Quinn Hughes element.
Yeah.
I just think, for me, part of it is they know they're not going to win without centers. Well, now,
regardless,
the downstream effect of that is you're going to lose Quinn Hughes.
Well, you're right, but the conclusion is the same. Like,
yeah.
They feel like they have to get that center.
Yeah.
Like, it's a must. Like, it's the top priority this offseason. So now, to get that center, we talked about, okay, draft picks and maybe prospects or whatever, but how much value do Canucks prospects and assets truly have? And I think that's the question. And the guy who should have the highest value outside of Quinn Hughes, of course, is their highest paid player. But does he?
All right, so we want to tier this out here of
yeah, like, what are their most valuable assets the team has? Like, actually, their most valuable asset.
What can you liquidate out of this team, right? To get to that stage of, by any means necessary, to get the centers. Now, you'd be trading a center in that scenario. What is Elias Pettersson's value? Again, if you ask the fans, all-time low. And it probably is at an all-time low. I'm sure teams are recalling and saying, well, you're retaining on this deal, right? Because it's a lot of years for a lot of money. Signing bonuses are going to come into play here as well. And I don't know if I want to sign up for that. So I would totally understand teams maybe being hesitant. But it should still be a huge return for if you're trading them before July 1. I get you're doing it at a low point, but you should still be asking for a ton.
No, you should be, absolutely. And I think that's why he wasn't traded. The Canucks put a high price on it. Now, do the Canucks get to a point where they feel like they just have to move the player? I don't think they're there yet. But Alvin didn't close that door either, saying that there has to be a two-way street and buy-in. If they don't see the buy-in, then maybe they do that at some point. But as it stands right now,
I just don't know you're going to see enough buy-in in the next 70 days.
No, right? I mean, this is why I pick, like, we'll get to this, you know, I'll get to the conclusion here in a second, but this is why I think it's unlikely Pettersson is getting traded. Because he should be their most valuable piece. And when you look at the actual potential, he is, right? Outside of Quinn Hughes, of course.
What it should cost, again, if he's firing optimally, it should cost you like the 4 first-round pick level.
On like the top offer sheet type level. Like, that's what you'd be asking for.
The Rantanen type deal.
Yes.
That's what it should look like if he's playing at his best.
Yeah, and it's not actually 4 first-round picks. It's like value. The valuation
the value
types,
four,
right?
Yes.
So, but it's not there at all. There's no. It's not even close to being there.
I don't think anyone's giving you that.
Not even close to it. And if that's the case, then he can have all the potential in the world, but the valuation is not there. So if it's not Pettersson, is he still, though, more valuable than this next guy on the list? And who is the next guy on the list?
I think it's got to be Tom Welander.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
The mystery box.
The mystery box. Could be anything.
Because David Yurchek was traded for, in different years of the drafts, but a 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, now he was a higher draft pick.
I'm not singing a Feist song there.
No, no.
Just yeah. A first, second, third, and a fourth.
Now, and he was a higher draft pick.
Yes, he was a 6th overall, but it should live in that realm. Like, we're talking about someone that was drafted 11th overall, also a righty.
Yeah.
But it should live in the realm of
at least a first. Let's
multiple
say a
picks.
Let's say a first and a second.
Yeah.
Let's just say, for argument's sake, if you don't want to go down far enough there. Is he more valuable than the Pettersson right now as a trade asset?
I think you're more likely to get that offer than the type of offer you want for Elias Pettersson. Okay. So that probably makes him more valuable.
Right. Then who's the next guy on the list after that?
You're probably your current first rounder, because that's 15th overall.
Right. And is that more valuable than Lekkerimäki or DPD?
They're probably on the same plane. So like your best tier is probably should be Elias Pettersson, then Tom Welander. Then it's probably your first rounder, Lekkerimäki and DPD. And this is the conversation I know we've had a lot. And I know Yannick has made this point that just one of these guys is not going to get you the thing. I heard you yesterday saying, okay, yeah, that's probably right. But multiple of this grouping could get you in line for what you want. Because if we just saw JT Miller get traded for essentially a first, second, third value, right? You get the first round pick. The second is like a Hedl, make weight money. And then the third or second, whatever
it is, Mancini.
Is Mancini. That's essentially the realm you live in. Well, a first is a first. Lekkerimäki is probably worth a first. And you've kind of sold me on this idea about DPD's trade value. It's probably fringe first, second.
Yeah.
So
high second at the very least.
Package a couple of these guys.
You're probably
very, very interesting. Now, I don't know if, again, Lekkerimäki might be in that 1-2 fringe range, wing, and all that sort of stuff. But together, like, these guys become very interesting.
Yeah, and I think if the Canucks are willing to move, and I think Pettersson, like Mike mentions, his upside outweighs the weak return you get for Pettersson. That's where I'm at. I think the upside for keeping Pettersson is higher than whatever return you're getting, which is going to be significantly under full value. And if you are moving other pieces, then you're actually keeping a center, where if you move him, you have to find two guys now. And I think that further complicates things for you, right? But those two of those pieces, can they get you whatever players available? Can you outbid teams with that? I don't know. But is there a next group of players interesting enough that you throw one or two of those guys into the mix? Can you be the team that acquires? Can you put the best package in front of another team? Like, if you're looking at the rest of their group was what? Like, it's the raw two types? The Sorominu, the asset value, right? Like, it's Ratu.
If you want to do someone off the roster, Curtis is texting in, like Philip Pronik.
Okay. Yeah, off the roster, sure. Like, he's higher.
Yeah.
He's higher up there on that list. But again, you're moving a right-hand, like a veteran defenseman, when you're trying to be good right now, right? Now, obviously, it could be a possibility. But if you move past that, though, if you're looking at sweetening the pot and saying that you're moving a couple of those higher-end guys you mentioned.
You don't really have those. Like, again, like maybe you want to go into the Sorominus of the world, but that's still unfulfilled potential,
yeah,
right?
But, like, but if you put those two and one of those guys together, is that a compelling enough package? Three of those pieces, where you're getting two blue chippers, two blue chip pieces, and then you're
first
getting
round value,
and then you're getting like a legitimate B plus guy too, thrown on top of it.
That should put you in the realm again. I think it's easy to get into a competitive realm.
Yeah, and I'm not saying the Canucks should go and trade all these guys here, but what we're trying to illuminate here is what the Canucks have to give up to acquire what they're looking to get, and whether what they have can actually acquire what they're looking to get. That's the big question I have here. I think the Canucks, if they throw enough at somebody, because they have enough pieces, but they might have to like deplete most of it. That's the thing. Like, are they willing to go that far where you're trading away like 3-year blue chip guys to make it happen?
You can get into a really competitive spot. So I think for a really good player too, if you are doing the first round pick and one of these guys.
Yeah.
But a team doesn't just negotiate with you. It's, all right, cool. Like, this is what this is worth. Let me go ask Minnesota. Let me go ask Columbus. Let me go ask Florida. Let me go ask Vegas what they would give up. And then you get into the where we're bidding against each other. And that's the part where I look at it. It's like, how as much as Vancouver might have a willingness to do it, do they have enough to win an arms race?
Yeah.
And that's where I get a little worried. Yeah. That's where... If you're a team that's selling a player, it's a lot easier to go get top dollar elsewhere, I think.
Yeah.
And you might just be left with a knife in a gunfight scenario then.
Yeah, man. It's one of those things, right? So you go through the list, and I think the Canucks, you heard the tone, and you heard the way they were very realistic about what they have to do and how difficult mm-hmm. it's going to be. But, you know... I do think they have enough pick that they can outbid other teams, but you're throwing the kitchen sink at it.
It really depends on the player.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think if you get to a certain level of player, some teams are going to fall over themselves. Right? Like any star player that gets moved,
yeah,
teams are willing to load up. Mm-hmm. Teams are willing to load up big, big offers. And is Vancouver's war chest big enough? I'm just not sure.
Yeah, Austin says, Demko, wouldn't he? I wouldn't, but he'd be interesting. And that's somebody that Woodley brought up last week. And we'll talk to Woodley coming up later today. Plus, we have RJ coming up. The Abbey Canucks are playing their first playoff game tonight against the Tucson Roadrunners in Abbey. So we have RJ, the GM of the Abbey Canucks and AGM for the Vancouver Canucks. He's going to be joining us later. Plus, overrated, underrated. So if you have overrated, underrated topics, get those into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. But on Demko, Woodley mentioned last week that, you know, from things he had heard, that people around the league think that he might be available for the right price potentially, as the Canucks are not leaving any stones unturned as far as improving the roster is concerned. So if he has enough value where you can get something that you can flip to get the player you want, again, like, I think the only player that we dismiss is
Quinn Hughes.
Now, I know people are checking in and saying, well, Quinn has already said he's not going to stay. These guys know that. Don't be, you know, doing things to keep him. I know that sentiment is out there, but I don't think Quinn is getting traded. Like, unless Quinn informs the team about something the next few weeks or months, Quinn's not getting traded this offseason. Mm-hmm. Now, again, crazy things happen in hockey, right? So we'll see what happens. But unless
shaking my head that we're at the stage of the conversation.
Unless he has a change of heart, like I don't think he's asked for a trade, right? So unless that happens, I don't think Quinn is going anywhere this offseason. But when this team is looking to get better, especially with hopes of keeping Quinn, I don't think there's a player who's untouchable, right?
Yeah. I think Quinn Hughes has got to give his brother some brotherly advice. Just be like, you know what, Luke? Negotiations are always very difficult. My second contract was very difficult. You can make it difficult on New Jersey.
Yeah.
Just have some fun with the contract negotiation.
Sea legs. We can't trade DPD. He's becoming the favorite. And I wouldn't be surprised, Bick, if there are people in the organization who feel the same way he does.
I agree. It's high-risk stuff.
Yeah.
But the risk of not having the center is also pretty great.
Well, Leaf says, is it possible that there's a winger out there that can be turned into a center? I mean,
JT 2.0 scenario, right? Yeah,
Alex Lafreniere is mm-hmm. a guy you wonder about, but you know, we talked about him in the past. Is he actually somebody who is available? So, you know, keep your thoughts coming in. Dunbar Lumber 650-650, and we'll interact with you and get more of you coming up a bit later on, especially during overrated, underrated. Quickly through the Canucks Central roundup. Obviously, the Vancouver PWHL team was announced today playing out of the Pacific Coliseum.
Yep.
Fantastic stuff. And it was interesting, the PNE led the bid process to bring the team to Vancouver. Now, the league in its entirety is owned by the Mark Walter Group, so they're not an owner of the team, but it was interesting reading how the PNE really tried hard to make this happen. And I think when you look at Rogers Arena with the Canucks and practice time already as it is, I think it's difficult to make it work with Rogers Arena, but
plus,
it makes sense for them.
Shout out at the Agrodome.
Yeah, they can practice there. Yeah.
They got a practice facility.
Yeah. Now,
ahead of the curve already.
Yeah, good for them. Now, there's a difference with
Yes.
Practice facility 100%. And NHL standard practice facility. But yes, it's great news for them, great start for them, and we're hoping to have Brian Burke on later this week as well to talk about that. The Leafs went up 2-0 on the Sen, series over?
No.
No?
I'm a big believer you're not in trouble until you lose on home ice.
Yeah. How about the Kaprizov-Boldy show in Vegas?
Oh, man. They made quick work of that game.
Yeah, they really did.
And Florida, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
They looked fierce.
Yeah, they really did. And tonight, Habs playing the Caps, currently scoreless in the first. Stars, Avs, Kings, Oilers. That is coming up later tonight. You can hear some of that coming up as well on Sportsnet 650. Now next, well, we are getting to our friend Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650.
Oh, hold on. You have a choice. You can have
Tom Willander
or the Mystery Box.
What, are you crazy? We'll take the...
No, not so fast, Lois. Mystery Box could be anything. It could even be a
Pomelander.
You know how much we've wanted one of those.